This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by the generous support of listeners like you. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/frogpants and consider contributing today. That's patreon.com/frogpants.
Good to see you.
Don't you give me that. We had dinner last night together, remember?
Be nice.
When I think that you've earned that privilege, I'll let you know.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 409, not the cleaner, just a number.
I was about to say 409.
Yeah, my whole childhood, everything was cleaned with 409 growing up. Yeah, it does work. Yeah.
This movie was a dirty dozen, and
it cleaned. It cleaned it with 409. Hey, that's not bad. It's kind of dumb, but not bad. All right.
There goes the Twitter post.
There you go.
Kind of like this movie.
Yeah. 409 is the episode, and I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian Kojak, is kind of racist, Dunaway.
Kind of racist? That dude is full-on racist. Mm. Oh, hi.
Hi.
This week on Film Sack, The Funky Four, we're sentenced to 2.5 hours of hard labor due to some indiscretions. Saturday night at Ibbot's house. Am I right? Ibbot.
Yes.
Ibbot,
sir, yes, sir.
You know what you did, you Telly Savalas looking creep. Anywho, let's go over the plan. One, log into Netflix. We've just begun. Oh, you're gonna do it with me?
Did you asked us to? Did you want me to?
Well, you never responded, so get in line. Sir, yes, sir.
Sir, yes, sir.
One. Here we go. One, log into Netflix. We've just begun. Two.
Just me? No, you guys aren't.
Let me do it. I'll just do it by myself. Right, you just these guys.
All right. All right. Okay.
Two, no Netflix, not now. Watch that new original later. Three, start the film.
Start the make film. The make the popcorn.
Sorry, I just remembered that one for some reason.
Four, fall asleep halfway through. Did that. No problem. Five, wake up and write the intro. Why don't those things rhyme? I don't know. It was dumb. Anyway, and where is Donner Sutherland? Where is he? Oh, he's face down on the ground with a look on his face like he had no idea bullets would hurt so much. Yep. Everybody get a good look. All right. Move along. Hey, what's the slowest possible way to get out of this intro? Perfect. Let's go. Yeah. No way did they drive that thing all the way down to the beach.
No.
Worst road trip ever.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. By the way, I'm glad I'm not the only one. I'm sure we all noticed it, but everybody stopped and paused and looked at Donald Sutherland face down.
They did. Yeah. They all walked by and went, "Erk."
It was
like, now on your left, you'll see Donald Sutherland.
After like the fourth or fifth guy, I'm like, okay, we get it. Yeah. One of yours is gone and you've noticed. We get it. And the sixth guy, you better not look at him. And then the sixth guy got killed. Anyway,
let's talk about that later.
Yeah. Also with us, Randy, he got tangled up in a tree, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian.
Hi.
Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
Okay, you maggots. I know you're tired, and we've been over this and over this. And I know you've spent your entire month of training, cracking jokes, and partying with magical women who just appear out of nowhere for the purpose of sexing you and then disappear back into the magical realm from whence they came. And I know it took you guys a month to build a couple of prefab houses. And seriously, with two buddies, I could have built this compound in like 5 days, maybe six, if we had to entertain magical women. And I know that you boys take copious smoke breaks. Like, holy crap, do you smoke a lot. Fellas, we're going to have to send you on suicide mission at age 28 because you're going to die of lung cancer in like 3 years. Still, the world is depending on us to carry out this incredibly important mission. So, one more time. One, two, buckle my shoe. Three, four, bar over the door. Yeah. Five, six, drop grenades and gasoline down the air vents. Whoa, brutal.
Yeah, that was brutal. Anyway, we'll get there. We'll talk about it. Also with us, and finally, Brian got $50. Ibit.
I love seeing him in there. Yep. All right. Well, I guess if you just want to do something right, apparently you just have to do it yourself. Randy, I think you'll know how to finish this up, but I present to you the Dirty Dubbin. Hold on. I'm starting this over.
Do it again. Do it again.
I did that. I recorded this for about the last hour.
Okay.
One, film sack has begun. Two, play for one time through. Three, Scoundrels is Brian D. Four, Brian says, oh, hi once more. Five, Randy's intro does arrive. Six, grab your crucifix. Oh, sorry. Seven, eight, if it's intro, don't be late. Nine, right now you're hearing mine. And ten, too tired to do it again.
Ready?
There's no 11 like or 12.
All the voices.
You didn't do
just
11.
Like fantastic. A Saturday night at Ibbitt's house.
Right, you're supposed to pipe in.
I mean,
hold on. Who were all the voices? Was it you just redoing them all?
Yeah, and that was me dubbing my voice 12 times in GarageBand, sitting at the table.
That's great.
I loved it.
On my iPad.
I particularly liked the version where it was you going, like you changed your voice.
I used Monster and Chipmunk in a couple of those voices.
That was great.
Because I thought it'd be racist if I did, it's time to do it again.
Yeah.
Right? But I wanted
but to. Not so racist you wouldn't do it right now.
Yeah,
but
course.
Yeah.
No, not so racist, exactly. I had to tell you how I wasn't racist by doing something racist.
You know, that guy peeled out of there. The him getting tangled up in a tree and being the first casualty was last minute decision. That dude quit because he's a singer and he was buddies with Frank Sinatra. And Frank Sinatra said, this movie's beneath you. You should get out of here and tour more and like focus on your music. And he got all wound up one day and just said, that's it, I'm quitting. And they'd filmed none of the rest of the movie, so they just said, oh, yeah, you got hung up in a tree and died. That's an awesome way to go in a movie.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. I thought it was like, that was a good write-in. I thought they did good with
that.
Yeah, he got funny, like a completely off-screen death. Like, oh, by the way, we're not going to show you how he died.
Right. This whole movie is wrapped up around the fact there's 12 guys, and we're just going to like, you know. How do you do?
Yeah.
Hang up in a tree.
Yeah.
Let's keep moving.
This is all
and
true.
You were complaining about the length, but when you have this many principles to establish, mm-hmm. like it takes a long time just to name them, mm-hmm. you know, like it takes a long time. Mm-hmm. Like there's a point where he early in the film where he's going around to their various cells and trying to talk them into taking this mission. And it's like, you could tell the script probably had 12 scenes mm-hmm. and they're like, no, we're only going to do about four of them. We're going to stick some of these guys in the same cell. Mm-hmm. Like that movie could have been 10 hours long.
These were like the extra doctors on MASH to me, because there were on MASH. You would always watch it and you'd see Hawkeye and you'd see Frank and everybody, and they'd be doing their thing. But in the background, there'd be these other surgeons that you never meet. They just would be there for crowd shots or the parties in the tent or show up for breakfast or whatever. But you'd never have any idea who they were. Or on Lost. Lost, there was always a ton of people on an island you'd never get to know.
Right.
And this was like that. There were parts of the 12, despite the fact that they got kind of called out in the beginning, they just never had a role again. Like, they just never did anything.
Yeah, just stand out. 12 is too many leads. Plus, you really have 13 because, of course, Lee Marvin. But
Lead Marvin.
It's too many people to keep track of.
Yeah. Lee Marvin, by the way, at 43 in this movie, he's in his real age when he was making this, he was 42 and 43. I would just like to point out that dudes in the 60s who were in their 40s look like they were in their 80s. Like, what the hell? How is that 43?
He did look a lot older,
That's crazy to me. He looks older than... at 43, he looks older than my 91-year-old father-in-law.
But he still looks like he could kick the ass of a 25-year-old.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And the first time you see Charles Bronson, you're like, oh, wow, he's been in the service for a while. Like, this is a weird thing. Like, what kind of crime does a 60-year-old man in the army commit that gets him thrown in jail?
All of these guys were much older. They were acting like they were, you know, active in their 20s, but most of them look like they were 40, 50, 60 years old.
Well, most of them look 60, 80, but most of them were low 40s. And in the case of Charles Bronson, he looks younger than Lee Marvin, but he's 46. So he's actually 4 years older, 3 or 4 years older than Lee Marvin. But Lee Marvin looks like he gave birth to everybody in that room. Like,
it's by the just way, Charles so weird. Bronson looks... Charles Bronson looks a lot better without that pencil thin mustache he sported later on.
Oh, you think?
Agreed. I like him without the mustache.
Dunaway, Team Johnson, Johnsonaway.
By the way, when you guys watch the Oscars in a couple weeks, look for the In Memoriam segment to have Clint Walker, the big burly Clint Walker, died in 2018 at the age of 90.
Oh my. He did all right.
Played Posey in this film. His only job was to be imposing, so I guess that kind of fits. But anyway, he's on my mind because he is the second example of Lee Marvin knows jujitsu. Holy crap! Does this movie decide to demonstrate to you that Major Reisman can take down anybody with just his hips?
Oh yeah, right. Well, that dude's got some. He's got it where it counts, but. So for those listening and going, what the hell movie is this? It's The Dirty Dozen, the movie we're talking about. It's 12 dudes who did terrible things in prison, or are now in prison, sorry, military prison for doing terrible things as soldiers. And they range from straight up murder to mutiny to, subverting authority to, turns out with Telly Savalas, full on rape and murder.
Jeez.
So well done there, Telly Savalas, who I think is actually really
you, baby.
I think he's really good in this. Like, he's actually one of the performances that stands out. He's also creepy as shit and gives me the willies every time he does anything, but I think that's, you know, again, and due to his good
that
performance.
That character almost went to Jack Palance, if I read that trivia correct.
Right. Yeah.
And he said no, and not unless you cut back on the racism. And they said, "Nah, we want the racism." And Telly Savalas said, "I'll do it."
Yeah, right, yeah. Telly Savalas was all in. I mean, he was pretty young here. He was like 41 or something.
Right.
Again, looking like he's 52, but it's fine. Whatever. This is a different time. They're all drinking and smoking themselves into older age. Like that was the era. And
a lot of them made it pretty good ways.
And in 1987, Telly Savalas took the Lee Marvin role. And for a TV movie called The Dirty Dozen, The Deadly Mission. So it was basically a remake of The Dirty Dozen, direct to TV. And
wasn't it a sequel? I thought it was a sequel.
No, there is a sequel that did have Lee Marvin resuming his role. But this one was a remake or a reboot, or not a reboot, but a remake of The Dirty Dozen called The Deadly Mission with Telly Savalas as the main guy.
But it also did
have Ernest Borgnine doing his same role.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah, I know they...
What do you think about Borgnine in this one? This was kind
of... Dude, Borgnine's awesome. Just freaking bring him out. He's like 5 miles wide, that guy. Just, he's got the craziest face.
Chested.
Weird teeth.
And give him some credit for great acting. That like the middle, so there, this is a movie in five acts, right? And the middle act is this ridiculous training exercise that, quite frankly, you could pull it completely out of the film and it wouldn't change anything.
Yes, please.
But whatever, it's there, it's fun, and it's ridiculous. And Ernest Borgnine has to do a bunch of acting with just his eyes and his expressions, and it's amazing. Like, every time you see him, you're like, wonder what he was really looking at as he looked toward the camera, like these little glances and stuff. Mm-hmm. That was the best acting in the film, was him quietly letting people know that he was in on the ruse.
Yeah, he's great. I never have qualms about him showing up in a movie we watch. I get excited about it. There's something about him. There's a presence there. It's both goofy and weird. Sometimes feels a little miscast, but always entertaining. Like, I don't know what it is with him.
But what about the miscast thing? Like, you come up, when you first meet him, you're like, how did this guy get to be a general? Then, like, he's one of the few in the whole cast that actually served. Yeah. Like, he actually, you know what I mean? Like, how do you get that feeling from the actual guy?
Well, a lot of those guys did. So, Lee Marvin was in the Army. Charles Bronson was in the Army. Who else? Or you said Borgnine. Oh, so,
yeah,
a couple other guys.
Whole list. Yeah, that's right. I remember seeing a whole list on... trivia section of IMDb, like a third or fourth of the or half of the guys in The Dirty Dozen were in some form of military.
Yeah, and Lee Marvin, right, who was known as a full-blown alcoholic, said called this movie crap and said just a dummy money maker, although he said he enjoyed making it. But he said the movie just really had nothing to do with war. He was pleased he got to do the Big Red One in 1980 because that much more mirrored his wartime experiences. But
right.
He said all of us were too old to play the characters we were playing. The book it's based on, they were all in their early 20s and some of them their late teens.
Right.
Like, it's just a...
That's kind of stuff it took away from it too. But, you know, it's a really smart movie, and it's a movie formula that's been used a lot over the years. And I think it was, I like the film. I haven't watched in a while. Yeah. But I realized that I've only seen the last 45 minutes.
It's the best 45 minutes. That's the best part
because
of the movie.
I think I've seen the last 45 minutes probably at least 6 times, but I don't remember hardly any of the rest of it.
So for me, I remembered the whole film, but not the whole film, because my dad, who loved movies like this, we talked about this before, he would, like, when VHS came around, my dad would go to great lengths to get, like, these certain movies that he loved. He got a VHS copy of The Dirty Dozen that had something like PBS on the sleeve and had been edited to be PG rated so it could be shown on broadcast television.
Oh, wow.
And this was in like the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that, and without the R-rated stuff, it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you never see anybody get shot. You just see pa, 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 and that's, and it's like, okay, but who died? And you'd have no idea. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole movie. And like, so I was shocked when you see them dropping grenades and gasoline down those vents, because, like, I never saw that. I don't remember that being in the movie.
Mm. Yeah, I never saw it. This is my first viewing. I always just knew it existed. And you know what? Elephant in the room. Let's get this out of the way. Last week, you guys, a couple of you were in the cahoots here, but I thought it was a Western, and I had it in my head for years and years and years that The Dirty Dozen, when you said that word, that what you were really talking about was The Wild Bunch. And I've conflated those two movies. And in my mind,
Magnificent Seven, maybe.
I mean, I knew the Magnificent Seven was different because I've watched that a billion times, the old one. And I knew it existed, but probably that was part of it. But also, just, you know, Dirty Dozen, Wild Bunch. It sounds like those two movies could both either be Westerns or, you know, goofed up military people. Yeah. And so I've just conflated them for years and years and years. And man, could you at home calm yourselves down? Because gosh dang it, every 5 seconds, email, tweet, something was just coming through going, Scott, that's not a Western. And then when I started showing pictures of it yesterday going, all right, we're doing the Dirty Dozen, getting excited, all these replies coming back going, well, that's not a Western. Ha, ha, ha. Very funny. I get it. I screwed it up. I didn't.
Well,
I forgot.
And okay? I was with you. I had no idea. Yeah, I was thinking it was a Western as well. Mm, and then Randy messaged.
Well, y'all kept saying it, and I was like,
not a Western.
Yeah. I kept saying it, and I was going right along, too. I'm like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, why not?
We need to watch The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, no, we do. That'd be great. I love that movie. But the thing is, like, okay. So just to give a general, you keep talking about the last 45 minutes. I think that's genuinely some of the most intense stuff you're going to get out of the 60s. I think it's really great. I think the first 2 hours are painfully boring. And I don't think this is a everyone problem. I think it's a me problem combined with what exposition was in the 60s or that era of filmmaking.
Yes.
And I just found it to be laborious and really hard to take. And I would love a remake of this movie where they tighten that up. That would be
It was
great.
So indulgently edited as well as filmed. Like, you have to film something in the first place to have the edit, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it was, there were so many people like John Cassavetes taking a freaking boot to the face. And then a second later, he's in his cell and he looks totally fine in the face.
No, and not a scratch on him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, wow, I would have edited that differently so that you weren't ever really seeing his face. But of course, he was a rising star, and the guy would go on to get nominations for 3 different categories of awards. Like, he was Oscar nominated for acting and screenwriting and directing. And so you're like, okay, I get why Cassavetes is getting a great beauty shot here. But the movie layers that on top of another thing and another thing that it shouldn't have done. And the next thing you know, you're just like, oh, God, I'm waiting for more comic relief. And the comic relief is horrible in this movie.
Mm-hmm. It also,
I wanted less comic relief. I also didn't appreciate, at one point in time, this movie turned into almost a musical without the music. without the singing.
Yeah, a little bit.
It was it had this weird vibe of I don't know, Sound of Music or something. I was like, what's going on right now?
They wanted to kind of go like I don't know, it felt like they were Stripes would obviously come much later than this, but
it
had a vibe of that. There's a little bit of MASH in there. There's a little bit of just Police Academy. I don't know. I can't explain that genre of everyone's a misfit until the big day comes and then suddenly we're all the best at this. That's what this movie is. It's a more serious take on that take, and that's fine. And it's good, and I liked it. I really did like it in the end. There are a lot of things I think just don't age well, like the way people would get shot in the 60s. We were at the pinnacle of how dumb that looked.
Especially the ones who dive forward through a glass window once you get shot. Like you're a sniper shooting.
Makes absolutely zero sense. Exactly. If you take a bullet, you're going to go backwards.
You're not going to go backwards.
Yeah, always. Exactly. Even if it like takes your spine out, your natural inclination, your body is going to shove away from the shooting, not toward it. And then also, it's just that whole, like, when they go, and then fall. We were at the crest of a change for that stuff. It was about to change forever, and we were going to have much more realistic notions of what death and violence looked like in movies. And this was considered so violent at the time, but I just thought that was cartoony. I liked how
Franco died. That seemed to be the most realistic. Just slumping forward.
Shot in the back. Yeah, but he's still, his head just drops down, like, immediately, like he's one of those giraffes with toys that you push the button on the bottom and all the slack goes out of the elastic holding it up.
Yeah, and as soon as he said, we've made it out, or whatever he said, I went, you're dead. I don't know how long it's going to take, but you're done.
Right. You look too happy.
Yeah. So there was, what did they leave with? Like a dirty 4 or a dirty 5?
No,
like,
a dirty 2.
That was a dirty 2?
It was just Bronson and...
Right.
Oh, right. They're the only two that made it. Wait, is that right? Or did some of the faceless guys make it?
Because they specifically put the most highly paid people in the final scene in the hospital beds and standing there looking at them. Like, Donald Sutherland didn't survive. I just knew he was going to survive this whole thing because the comic relief of him being so dumb was used too much, and so it led me to believe, oh, he's going to make it out of this. How do you not do that trope? Like, for all the tropes of this film, not do the trope where the dumb guy survives through lack of wit is weird.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you, Telly Savalas was the intentionally creepy character in this film, but to me, Donald Sutherland's character was creepier. It just...
His facial expressions, he was unpredictable.
There were times where he'd sit there and look kind of almost mousy and submissive, and then the next second he's the worst, most sarcastic, like, you were hiding this the whole time, you're a real a-hole guy, and then later he's like a scared rat, and then he's not again. Like, I agree he's a freak show in this.
Did they ever really say, because they went down everybody's list, and I was trying to remember, I'm like, what was he in there for? I couldn't remember. They went across a lot of them, but I was like, did they go across his backstory? And it was just unsettling.
It was weird. Yeah. But Telly Savalas was meant to be the... And he played this role, and I don't know what this trope is called, but it's basically like the... I can't think of the actor's name suddenly. Anyway, the general dude in Apocalypse Now, played by famous actor...
Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando, thank you. Somebody who just cracks in the... In the out there thing, it's often a trope in the Vietnam movies, more so than the World War II stuff. But he maybe I just saw this movie for the first time, but maybe in 67 was one of the most early, versions of that. And maybe that was them in the late 60s when Vietnam is raging, where they're like, let's sneak in some stuff that's, kind of relevant today, which is, mental health out in the field. And it's not all it's cracked up to be, and not everyone's just a heroic Captain America figure. These are broken men, and that's interesting for the 60s. I don't think that was being done a lot. Oh, I agree. It's not played enough. It's not played right.
It's discarded in favor of George Kennedy having a trope laugh.
Yeah,
seriously. Like, we get, like, the movie gives more time to George Kennedy mugging at the other guys because he ran into the camp to see the final outcome of the training. Like, the trope laugh scene ruined the film, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It completely destroyed the film.
Oh, really? It was really excessive. I don't know about it ruining it, but it just felt like, okay, we get it. You guys won, and you get to do your mission, and let's move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a bit of that. I really confused a lot of things here. You guys have seen Kelly's Heroes, or at least heard of it.
Yes.
It's another war movie. Came out like three or four years later, or something like that, 70, I think. And it's Clint Eastwood, but it's all these guys again. Telly Savalas is in that one. Donald Sutherland's in that one. And so is freaking Ernest Borgnine's in it. And it's another movie about a misfit band of military guys that get used in World War II to sneak in and do a thing that nobody else wants to do. And I'm like, wait a minute. Is this like I don't know what this is like. Why was that a thing? Why would you make a movie?
Didn't we have Inglourious Basterds was kind of the same
right,
thing.
Right, right. It's something that
it's the same actors is what I'm saying. That's the weird bit.
Same like actors.
imagine if you did Star Wars, okay? And then the two years later, you did a movie called War Among the Stars. And in that movie, you had Harrison Ford as Burns Blolo. And, you know, like...
sure. Yeah,
it's weird. I thought it was weird, but whatever. Telly Savalas.
It is odd.
Yeah. I'm not that I don't want to see Kelly's Heroes. Everyone tells me it's the better film, but I don't know.
What do you guys think about Suicide Squad?
Kind of the same thing. Except in, you know, am I misremembering that they had devices implanted in there?
Yeah, no, you remember that correctly. And and one of them ends very quickly. As soon as the mission starts, there's a lot of parallels there. So it's intentional.
Right. It's the trope. And, that's the entire basis, right?
It is the trope. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure there are many others we could think of. Anything where the misfits have to go do the job,
or where you recruit the bad guy to get the even badder guy, like the Hannibal Lecter kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and of course,
they usually outsmart the person hiring the bad guy.
Yeah,
right.
In this case,
it's always a horrible idea to put your put one of the most important parts of the mission prior to the D-Day invasion to disrupt, the chain of command. Who do you send? Men who have nothing to lose. When you know, in a volunteer army during that time, there were plenty of men who would be willing to sacrifice their life for such a mission.
And remember, not volunteer army. Like almost all these guys were originally drafted against their will in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And they're even depicted, most of them are depicted as being kind of uneducated,
mm-hmm.
which takes it to this level that I couldn't follow. Like if they had been given better backstories, every one of them, you know, and like there were bad people, but were interesting and not just like dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been a fantastic film, you know?
Yeah. I think there were some corners cut and the Lee Marvin's probably not wrong that this was in its day kind of like Inglourious Basterds, kind of a over the top. You know, you got to really stretch your brain and park your brain a little bit to accept what's happening here kind of film. But I enjoy that. Like, I like it. And I'm just not sure that what they thought was great for this sort of thing in 67 is as great as it would be today. And that's why I'm just going to say for the record, I think this movie deserves a remake and a proper one by a good director with a young cast. Even if you want, put him in the first Gulf War. But do whatever you got to do. It doesn't have to be World War II, or maybe it can. It doesn't matter to me where you want to do it, but change all that up if you want, but have a really strong, feisty young cast, go rated R, let them have, you know, actual, language happening that you would have, let them have some blood in the big fight. Like, they really could make a cool movie today.
Oh, yeah.
And I would watch out of that.
The question is though, did this movie resonate in 1967 with a generation who had all experienced war to a greater degree? Would that still play? Would we be interested in seeing a war type movie that really looks at the nuances of of a training camp and, you know, basic training and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
I think so. I mean, I think that stuff is, there's kind of a perennialness to it, right? I mean, you can kind of always do a war movie. It doesn't just have to be as we're still licking our wounds or feeling the sting of a recent war. I feel like that stuff, especially if it's historical, can be timeless.
I also think there's a tendency today for us to prefer historically accurate war movies. And, and I think we have less of a taste for ones that are fictional. And so I think that's really your only hurdle. Like you can count on every year something big war-like, although 2018 wasn't full of these, but you know, like Dunkirk was a huge war thing, but again, it was a reenactment, not a reenactment, but a film about a historically accurate moment in time. And I think people have a better stomach for that right now than they do coming in and making something up, because then it feels artificial and maybe not as reverent to the source. You know, even Tarantino's movie had some connectivity to actual stuff, although all of it was blown, you know, up huge. But at least you could point to it and say, oh, this is kind of based on the these Nazi hunter guys. And, you know, they actually existed and their names weren't this and they didn't look like freaking Eli Roth. But, hey, they were there. And so I think it can be done. But it doesn't necessarily, this is an interesting point, Dunaway. I'm glad you brought it up. They don't have to do the remake with war. They could do it with anything. Like, just, if you think about it, the Fast and the Furious series, which has gone complete bonko now, by the way, that new trailer looks awesome for that Hobbs and Shaw thing. I can't wait for it.
Well, and I'd even argue that Guardians of the Galaxy is kind of this, right?
Same idea.
It's a ragtag bunch of criminals that join forces to do something. They're not hired by someone to do it, but
But you really need a Lee Marvin type person over top of, you know, riding on these guys.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. But also remember, Lee Marvin in this world anyway is considered by all his superiors to be a total rebel and hard to deal with and always skirting the line. So, I mean, he wasn't hired for this because he was Mr. Straight-Lace. He was just more straight-laced than the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he was also kind of a rebel. I think that would work in a lot of scenarios. Like, I don't know what they are, but the idea of hiring prisoners to do a thing we need, let's say it's a government thing and they're just regular prisoners. Mm. Let them go save the bank or whatever it is. I don't know what it is, but
save the bank. We got to save America's money.
I don't
save
know
the
what
bank,
it is.
Save the world.
I don't know what it is. Like, get the hostages out or go, you know, hire a bunch of ex-hitmen to stop the worst hitman
ever. Be our disposable heroes.
Yeah,
basically.
Something I like. There's something to be liked about that, and I think to play with, and I think it sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, and this is just a good early example of it. But, you know, my dad, I think there's something about probably all of our dads, this was like a really cool thing for them when they were our age. Like, this movie would have been about when we were who we are now, and it would have spoke to them in a way that, you know, the war was barely 20 years on, or, you know, since World War II, and Vietnam was raging at the time. Like, that's not very much time. 20 years is nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it's further away from us we get all nostalgic about Back to the Future. Guess what? That's way further back than the war was for them at that time. So,
yeah.
I thought a lot about that during this movie, is like how close a lot of the war movies that were so popular, all the John Ford stuff and everybody else, it was all kind of fresh. Like, we just really won that war. Like,
I thought a lot about it too, because a lot of things I didn't understand references. I was like, oh, would I get that more, or would I be able to relate to the characters more if I had experienced, you know, that type of boot camp and military experience?
Yeah.
I feel like I was missing a lot of things that was probably authentic to a degree, but really loose, you know?
Well, the problem with us is we were raised in a very paranoid film time, I think, because the stuff we got when we were young and impressionable were Full Metal Jacket and Platoon and movies that terrified me about the military. Like, it wasn't, the military didn't scare me from a, hey, go serve your country and do a good thing, or, you know, go fight for your rights, or that's all fine. What scared me was, oh, they're beating the shit out of each other and they got a bag full of soap and they're beating that poor guy in this bunk and and, oh, this other guy got raped with a stick, or, you know, whatever it is. To me, it was the depravity of the actual army experience that the movies were showing. I'm not saying it's realistic. Maybe it was, but that really scared me as a young 20-something. I just was like, ugh, I don't want to. I don't want to go. Absolutely.
It does scare us. It's just like when I watch movies with my kids, and we'll watch some movie from the 80s, and there'll be like this serious bullies in school. They're just literally beating up people like every single day.
Yeah.
And my kids go, that's not really what happens. And I'm like, you're probably kind of right. It wasn't that bad. It felt that bad.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really in reality getting beat up every day and get my lunch money taken, even though I could maybe romanticize the memory of being, picked on and sure. bullied, but it was nothing to that degree.
Right. I don't know. That's what entertainment is, right? Like it's this weird,
right.
overblown version of our fears, our hopes, our dreams, our failures or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I want to
take a step back. Number four. Sir. I want to take a step back to the main trope, like the trope of the film is the ragtag bunch of misfits trope, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So ragtag bunch of misfits. This is where that trope starts with this movie. Like just try to name one that really precedes it, but then it becomes a thing. Like as time goes by, it gets to be more and more and more until it's like it feels like every film is the Bad News Bears or Major League, or I'm not saying they're all sports films, but like Rogue One is a ragtag bunch of misfits film. Oh, right?
Totally, it is. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's totally true.
And it's almost gotten to where you're like, it's not a trope anymore because it's so. It's just like something that we fantasize about. We just can't help but think, you know, I may be, just like a normal person who has no business trying to save the galaxy, but I could be a guardian of the galaxy because I'd be thrown together with these other. And so like it feels good. We get a lot of enjoyment out of it. Mm-hmm. And it's just a fascinating trope. Like when you start to think about it, it feels like most adventure movies now, that's how they're laid out. They're not the right choice for the job. They're just the choice for the job, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I was starting to think of previous ones, and the closest I can come to would be the lineage of Seven Samurai, which would turn into the Magnificent Seven, which is that precedes this movie by 7 years. So in 1960, you had the Magnificent Seven, and I think, I don't know, that might be your original. I think it's easier one to pull off without it feeling like you're playing with the trope, because it's the Western, and the Western has always been about anti-heroes and kind of losers, you know, picking up the gun and taking on the thing or whatever. But there's a good example of it. And that also had Charles Bronson in it, who played Bernardo O'Reilly in that movie. What a dumb name, Bernardo O'Reilly.
Bernardo. Sorry, Bernardo is out there listening.
He claims he left the theater because he thought it was too violent, by the way. I don't know if any of that's true, but Charles Bronson, who went on to do the Death Wish movies, mind you, says that it was too violent for him and he had to walk out of his viewing.
Oh my God.
I know, dude. It annoys me.
I want to ask though, does anybody have a favorite ragtag group of misfits film other than Armageddon? Don't everybody say Armageddon.
Oh my gosh, Armageddon's a good one. Oh,
that's a perfect one too.
Because I do. I have a favorite of all time that I watch. I have probably seen 100 times.
Okay.
It's hard for me not to do Guardians of the Galaxy. I love those two movies. I mean,
they're great. It fits. I'm trying to think. Yeah.
Do you remember when we watched The Replacements, the football movie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait.
Is that the one? Is that what you're going to pick?
No, I'm just saying like that, that it just popped into my head that it was like the most ragtag thing. And it's like, that would never work.
I don't think we did the replacements. What's The Replacements? Hold on.
Oh, we didn't?
No.
Oh, wow.
We
watched The Longest Yard and.
Right.
Longest Yard, original Longest Yard is this director. We should mention that. The guy that made it.
And it is a ragtag group of prisoners.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Replacements gets back on Netflix, we're watching it. I don't care what you think about comedies. Anyway, mine for all time is this Kelsey Grammer film called Down Periscope.
Oh, and I love like, Down Periscope.
Yeah, and it's like they took Dirty Dozen, and I didn't realize it until this watching of Dirty Dozen. It's like they took Dirty Dozen and were like, we're going to list out the top 40 tropes in this movie, and we're going to make sure we hit every one of them or subvert them every single time.
Yeah.
And like I kept thinking about Down Periscope while watching this, like, man, it's just a direct correlation.
Movie. That movie's got I might be confusing it with the Steve Martin one that's also about
right.
Which one?
And that one, the Steve Martin one, was a remake of a TV show, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the TV show was Ernest Borgnine in the main role.
Right.
Just to
right.
bring us around. What was that called?
I keep thinking Hogan's Heroes, but it's not Hogan's Heroes. No. It's,
shit. It's like that, though. It's his name.
Yes. Right.
Right?
Yes.
And I want to say it was one of the last performances we got out of Phil
Sergeant
Hartman.
Bilko.
Sergeant Bilko.
Bilko, yes.
That's
right.
It, yeah. That's a great, by the way, the old Sergeant Bilko is a lot of fun to watch, old black and white thing. But that movie's also great. So yes, Down Periscope and Sergeant Bilko, they don't have any right to be as fun and great as they are. Those are two fine 1990s era good time yep. movie watching.
I'm going to go, even though it's not a movie and there's probably plenty better to pick, but after watching The Dirty Dozen, I have been wanting to go back and watch Black Sheep Squadron. I've watched all of those all the way through, and it's a ragtag team of pilots. And as a TV show, I felt like it was very progressive.
I'm going to say one of the ones we previously watched, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Oh, good one.
I like that ragtag group of idiots. That's a fun one.
I just like the phrase ragtag. You know,
ragtag. It's like,
There's a I don't know the origination of the phrase, but just ragtag.
Yeah.
There's a whole discussion out there about how Star Wars is just ragtag bunch of misfits in space.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree, but there's not enough of them. Really, the only real misfits are Luke and Han, and the rest are all competent and like doing what they're supposed to
they
be doing, right?
Job.
Like, Chewbacca, Leia, like they're real actual heroes, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then of course your other actual hero in Ben Kenobi, goes and gets himself killed in the middle of the first film. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. But but like I never really bought that it was just that trope until Rogue One. And then I was like, oh wow. Okay, I get it now. It really is Rogue One is, I think, my favorite Star Wars movie. Mm. And it doesn't exist without this trope.
I like that movie a lot, too. I don't know what it is. There are people I know. Well, Justin Robert Young, for example, freaking with a fiery passion, hates that movie.
Hates
Yeah. I would love like a 10-minute podcast of just you and him head-to-head on that, because I'm on your side on this. I totally agree. I think that movie's
great. It's probably
great.
My fourth or fifth favorite.
It's fun. I don't know. But it's probably not my favorite. It's not my favorite, but it's up there with, mm-hmm. the news. As far as the new stuff goes, it might be my favorite of the new stuff, actually. I really like
Solo
it.
Solo is my favorite of the new stuff.
Oh, you're a weirdo. Actually, yeah, Solo's all right.
I said it.
Solo's all right. I like it.
But yeah, and I don't like to debate films with people, someone who just, it didn't land. Like, it's just not fair, because it's so easy to just tear down a film and find every little thing that you're supposed to dislike about it. And it's like, I don't want to try to convince somebody to like something if it didn't land for them, right?
Like,
that's how it goes.
Sure.
But turning it around, when I like strongly, you guys will have to remind me of a film I've strongly disliked. I sometimes kind of wish, with a film that I strongly disliked, that someone could just come along and thump me on the head and make me like it. Because,
Time Bandits.
What?
Time Bandits. I want to thump you in the head and go, you like Time Bandits. You just don't know it. That movie's
great. Maybe I should find Rogue One is the perfect example. For me, it's about watching all these other movies and then this one, and it fits into them. And it's beautiful, like the way it fits. And at the end of it, I'm crying because I've seen the other ones. And so like maybe Time Bandits, maybe there's this like combination of things. Like if you watch these episodes of Monty Python and then you watch this movie and then Time Bandits, you're going to be like in the right frame of mind for it. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. Man, it's weird, by the way. While we've been talking, I've been going through all these old movies to see what we've seen or haven't seen that might fit this trope.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, you guys. This October, we will have been doing this show for 10 freaking years. Like, we got to celebrate that. Yeah, October 29th, 2009 was our first episode, the one about Kroll. And that's just crazy. We just have to, I don't know what we're going to do. We got to do something cool.
We got to do something, yeah. I guess we have to all go to South Carolina, because
that's right.
Someone won't travel to us.
We're going to... You say that, but don't forget, I'm on the other side of the country. That's the way to go.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, it's a long way to go, but we'll figure something out.
Go into Florida in like August. Maybe we all go. Oh, do something.
Totally. I would totally meet you in Florida. But when you go,
what time?
If you guys were like podcast, whatever it is, movement.
Oh, the movement. Right. What's the dates? Do you know the dates?
August 16th, I want to say. I have a somewhere right reunion. right in the middle of the month.
I have a family reunion I'm trying to avoid. Maybe this will.
Oh, perfect. Oh, I can't. I have to go to the, you know, the big podcast con.
Yeah, sorry guys. Huge work thing. See you later.
It starts August 13th in Orlando.
It's Orlando. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that. My family, if you're listening, I'm not saying it's fine. We're just talking here. We're not saying anything for sure. Here's a little bit of trivia for you. I love this one. At a cocktail function in London, Lee Marvin, our star here, got drunk and propositioned an old lady in a very vulgar manner. They don't get into what manner here. It says, so slurred was his speech that she asked him to repeat it, and he obliged. The woman turned out to be Sean Connery's aunt.
Nice.
Connery was on his way to Marvin's general direction after hearing what happened when producer Kenneth Hyman intervened. Now, I just wanted to point out that a hymen got in the way. I just want to point that out.
Right. I thought people were going to go there.
Then he says to Sean Connery, he says, don't hit him in the face, Sean, he begged. He's got his close-ups tomorrow. Fortunately, Connery saw the funny side and roared with laughter and says, you effing producers. And then he left. If that's a true story, then I'm glad we live on Earth. As long as we're talking
about inappropriate meetups, we should probably talk about the one in this movie where they bring in. Look, either you have 12
the dirtier
ladies,
half dozen,
right? Either you have 12 ladies to bring to the barracks, or you have none. Yeah. You don't show up with eight.
Somebody's gonna have to do double duty, and I'm not. Right. And no one's interested in that. Yeah, maybe, that was
some of the maybe some of the men were pairing up with each other. Did you ever think of that?
No, I hadn't.
I tried not to, but thanks. Okay. But you only really need 11 because Telly Savalas doesn't get one.
I picture I can picture George Kennedy.
I'll just hang out up here in the crow's nest.
I pictured George Kennedy and the singer on the guitar making out in the corner. I can picture that. But here's the thing. Here's what I would say about that entire scene. That is so a 1960s things to do, because they really, all that's implied, well, I mean, there's lots of that's implied, but all that they really convey is like, oh, look, they're there and they're going to dance. And it's like they have some companionship for the day. Oh, this is so nice. What a nice thing this is. But everybody in their brain knows what's going on. They're all in there doing it. And there's only eight of them and it's wrong. So what are you doing?
And there's only one barracks, and it's wow. That's the dirty dozen.
Yeah, that's the dirty dozen. Yeah. You know what's dirty is the dozen.
These guys stink, and they... Yeah.
The dozen bits of dirty underwear laying around on the floor. That's their dirty dozen. Yuck. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of that either, but there's that.
But, yeah, it was such a weird... Because I kept trying to think in my intro of me being the guy who has to go to town and convince eight ladies to come back to my barracks out in the middle of nowhere to meet up with some guys.
Well, you also named my grossest moment of the film.
Oh, sure.
That's all that really grossed me out. Everything else was pretty tame, but just the thought of what that meant and was, and that the one of them's like 70, and the other one's like I don't know, high school age.
I don't
like,
know. Was she 70? Because the dudes all looked old. Maybe she was, you know, in her 30s.
She's probably 31.
The Agnes Moorehead looking one.
Yeah, that one. The Agnes Moorehead looking one. Oh, that's a great way of saying that. That's exactly right. We got a montage. I haven't had one of those in a while. That was nice.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. They could have montaged a lot more of this movie.
Yeah, I agree. There was a lot of that stuff. The training just went on too long. I was like, all right, I get it.
And the training didn't bother me as much as the war exercise. That was an exercise for me.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't care for it.
And there was a subplot that meant nothing and went nowhere, where Reisman had a beef with Breed, and we didn't get to see why, and we didn't get to see it play out in a way that would make any sense in the military. Well, instead, what they did, it played out in Breed doesn't know what's going on, so he decides to get to the bottom of it by being all asshole. And then Reisman comes along and threatens another officer with a gun and shoots at him and stuff. And it's just like, this is just not even close. Like, I just felt like we were watching this other movie for that entire subplot.
Exactly. I kept waiting for them to have like a big standee poster with like peel off skin, peel off clothes. Mm-hmm. Like I was watching Major League there for a moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They never, that's chick in the bucket, by the way, I think, is that whatever their previous run-ins that made him so concerned about having to work with him, they never explain it. It's just,
I'll tell you what the chicken, I'll tell you the chicken bucket is. I'll tell you what the chicken in the bucket is the trip from the house to the beach, because you can't just gloss over that part, because that stupid motor vehicle they were using was going 5 miles an hour.
And it's not terribly stealthy sounding.
It is not stealthy, and there's like 100 Germans all around them.
Yeah.
You can't just gloss over that part.
Plus those army,
one
guys.
One more chick in the bucket, too, if that wasn't enough.
Yeah, go ahead.
The, what happened to the dude whose foot got stuck in the roof?
Blown up. Yeah. I assume we're supposed to assume he got blown up, I think, aren't we?
He certainly died when the whole place went up, but did he get off of there, or does he just like throw my grenades and then duck? And
yeah, he was actually, wasn't he? Oh, I can't remember. I thought he did get off later.
No, here's what I would say. He threw like four grenades in there and then just he sacrificed himself, because those explosions on the roof would have killed him.
Like, I thought I saw him walk by and look at Sutherland.
Well, you're just thinking that because everyone did that.
Everybody.
Yeah. Exactly.
I was just mad at the movie because it happens in a quiet scene. He's sneaking across a roof.
Oh my gosh.
And he falls through, and it's the loudest freaking thing in the movie. It
scared me.
Like, him slipping into that roof sounded like a cannon going off. Yeah. I don't know why.
And it made me jump. I was resentful. It made me mad. I was like, damn it. I'm watching your old ass movie. You're not supposed to scare me like this.
Right.
It really did make me jump right out of my chair.
It did, me too. It did too. I freaked out. I knew it was coming too, because I'm like, you don't step on the flat part. You step on the beams.
Exactly. Right. But it looks. Listen, if a German lady screaming her head off isn't enough to make those guys get out of their chairs and say, oh, maybe something's going on.
Hey, but that was the trope of the indecent woman having sex.
Mm-hmm. Like, ladies screaming, it's funny.
Mm-hmm. And we all had, and again, a trope laugh. Do you remember? They're all hot with their mouths wide open laughing because they heard a woman screaming.
Showing us their big German maws. That was great.
Right.
Just big, ugly freaking teeth. Old guys who were probably really only 30.
Ah, must be nerves. Get me another Jägermeister.
But yeah, also the 60s. That's the time where you use the same explosion stock sounds over and over and over again. You need a gun, it will sound the same every time it's fired.
There was a couple of things. Once again, like I said, maybe it was ignorance to what military things go on, but when Franco acquired the slowest moving vehicle in the movie, it was attached to a big giant gun. And I'm like, take that with you. Get on it. Gear it up.
they would have abandoned it for one of the 50 Jeeps within a quarter of a mile. Like, it's so stupid that they drove that even a foot. Like,
Franco would still be alive, though, if they would have kept the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You should have take the gun. That's what they should have done. Well, that's your movie. That's your film. Let's do some clips. Clips?
Some sounds. Let's do some sounds.
Yeah,
let's do
I got some sounds from the... I'm going to make some noise. Put your hands together and make some noise for this thing, which is... What? Oh, they're talking about why the war wasn't started. This is some good Borgnine right up in your face.
This war was not started for your private gratification, and you can be damn sure that this army isn't being run for your personal convenience either.
Well, all right. No personal private gratification and no personal convenience. Thank you very much. Here's be reverend or shut up. Go ahead. What? What'd you say?
I just wanted to say, did anybody look at that scene and wonder if it felt really anachronistic? Like, I don't know. The whole movie is a bunch of Americans in England, and I never really feel like it knows where it is.
Yeah.
Right, like, right. They're in this glorious ballroom in a castle somewhere, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And they're just sitting there barking at each other. I'm just like, really? England just gave us these castles to use? And, well, like,
yeah.
Trivia, trivia just, says the exterior was built by them, obviously, because they blew it up. But the interior, yeah, we don't know. Where the hell's that? And that was in the UK. They were in the UK someplace, right?
Sorry. Yeah, and I'm just, yeah. I don't know. Well, it's just
the,
like,
I thought the chalet was in France.
Oh, it was supposed to be, right. But I think, yes. the whole, like, I think the film, yeah. I think the movie was
but
filmed.
But everything in, else, in well, I think they were doing all their training, building their compound. The prisoners were in the UK, traveled to France. The chalet was in France that they were attacking.
Yeah, yeah. No, in the story, yes. I'm just meant the... Oh, everything is filmed in
physical location.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, like, these guys barking at each other in this beautiful room.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, like, I get that it was nice to film and nice to see, but it just, it kept taking me out of the movie. Mm. It happened again later when they are showing up to this Air Force base, and it's only Americans. I'm sorry, we're in England. It wouldn't be only Americans. Yeah. And they're literally playing American march music. And I'm just like, no, I just don't think this would be happening. It doesn't feel right to me.
It's a good trope, though, because there's always a band in a military thing where there's a little comedy relief where they're like cranking up the band, and then everyone's like, yeah. Nah, he's not here yet, and it fizzles out. Like, that's totally
I was trying to think of a film that was a military-based film, war film, that did not have the de facto military music. You know, got the snare drums and the trumpets and stuff. Is there anything that really went outside of that? I mean, like remember The Knight's Tale, which is not a military movie, but it was a period movie that used, you know, modern music.
Well, a lot of anything Vietnam era was always like CCR and like 60s era.
Right, right.
But they still always had that march music as the scoring. Mm-hmm. Like every Vietnam, I can't think of a Vietnam movie that stuck with only, you know, Steve
right.
Miller.
There's always that in a, you know, middle parts where it's the drums and it's always in there. Just curious.
Yeah. I don't know. There's probably something. Like, I can't think of anything, but. Like, nobody's using Vangelis, I don't think.
Sure. Right.
As far as I know, except that thin blue
anyway,
line.
Anyway, you're absolutely, I want to underline Brian Dunaway. Someone needs to make a World War II film, set it in the Pacific Theater, and fill it with modern music. I want to hear freaking Imagine Dragons over Pearl Harbor.
I would, too.
That'd be all right.
Just so we can tear it apart.
Well, instead of, but it's, you got to remember, in Armageddon, they did. They played Aerosmith, yeah. Well, they were they were shoving the cracker in her belly button. That part,
get in there,
get in there, damn it! all right, here's some good advice.
Either ask relevant questions or shut up.
Okay, that's cool.
I always like how Ernest Borgnine's teeth look like he just inserted each one of them right before they yelled action.
Yeah, and there's a minimum, like, oh, we need a centimeter between each tooth, please.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I only have 11 teeth up here. Yeah. How am I going to just spread them out?
Odd mouth. Just an odd, big, wide
and he's not afraid. And he doesn't seem to be conscious about
it.
Oh, no. He has no trouble smiling, laughing.
Exactly. That guy was great, dude. Nothing wrong with that guy. He's great. He died, and that sucks. That's the only thing that sucks about him.
Come on.
Here's a what? What happened?
You're somebody's right? calling me on my Echo.
Oh. All right. Well, I'm glad.
You know, I could mute my phone all I want, but then it's like,
I don't have that hooked up because I don't want to get people through that damn thing.
Hey, only Siri. One person ever does that.
Yeah.
Hey, Siri.
Randy?
call Brian Ibbitt's Echo.
Call his Echo. Yeah. I found this on the web. All right. Here's
that's exactly what I found this on. That's exactly what just happened.
Of course. Here's let's see, what's this? Oh, something about something stinking.
I don't like it. I think it stinks.
Okay, there you go. Oh, sorry, that was Lee Marvin. Enough of your insolence.
I've had about enough of your insolence.
Okay, great. He doesn't like officers.
I don't like officers.
Okay, cool. And then Jim Brown growls.
Ah!
Oh, we haven't talked about him yet.
Oh, we haven't even talked about Jim Brown, yeah.
Yeah, and he was still playing for the NFL and was in
between
seasons. Between
seasons. Really? Yeah. Cleveland Browns, I think?
Yeah. Brown and Brown.
I would have thought this was right after he retired.
Nope. In fact, there was a big controversy about him almost missing the preseason required, whatever you have to do in the NFL, and he barely made it or something.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah. Well, he must have been much beloved during this time in the movie, because we were losing people left and right, mm-hmm. right? Characters are dying, and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. I mean, poor Sutherland, people just gave him like a glance out of the corner of her eye, and was kind of like, okay, I accept the fact that he's dead, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they kept on going.
I'm correct. This is a couple years after he retired. Oh. As a kid, I read all those books. There were these skinny books in the library about all these different famous sports people.
Yeah.
And I probably read the Jim Brown book 100 times. Like, I just loved the story of Jim Brown being the greatest football player of all time.
Yeah.
And at the time, when I was a kid, the big controversy was, is Walter Payton now the greatest football player of all time?
Sure.
Anyway, Jim Brown retired after the 64 season. But you're thinking of a different thing. He had started acting in a movie called Rio Conchos right before his last season.
That's probably what I've done. Yeah, I read that somewhere and I can't remember. I thought it was this movie, but he's you know, to become this star. He's still alive, by the way, 80 something. And to do that during the thick of the civil rights era is kind of awesome. Like, this was unusual. And it's great. That dude blazed a trail.
And the great thing about Jim Brown is that he was always willing to sit for an interview. So there's tons and tons of him talking about, like, answering the question over and over and over. Why did you make all of these blaxploitation films? Mm-hmm. And like him, he's got some really good reasons, and like the really thoughtful guy for a football player who took a lot of shots to the head.
Yeah,
Brown is. He's like one of these great representations of the black experience before, during, and after civil rights.
Yeah, yeah. And also, it's a thing to point out, him and Sutherland are the only two of the 12 and leadership who are alive. Like, everyone's dead.
Oh, really?
In this movie. Yeah.
They're still alive. Wow.
Yeah. Those two are still kicking it. A lot of them died kind of young. Lee Marvin died at like 61, pretty young. 63, I guess. Sorry. And then, what's his name? Charles Bronson died in like 89 or something.
Wow.
All those guys are, I guess, the one Randy brought up earlier died last year, I guess.
This is, by the way, according to FilmSack stats, this is our third Jim Brown film, mm-hmm. and I can only think of one other, so I'd like to know what the third one is. This one and Take a Hard Ride
Wasn't he in Running Man?
Oh, right, of course. He was Fireball.
Oh, right. Yep, he was in Running Man. Good job, Brian. Look at that.
Thanks.
Look at the recall on you. It's total recall.
I have total recall, except it was Running Man.
That was a good combo there. All right. What's this? Okay, Jim Brown. I already did this? Yeah, I did that. He growls. Okay, here's Telly Savalas.
Vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. Paul to the Romans, chapter 12.
Dude's creepy, dude.
He is creepy.
Yeah. It's such a different, like, When he got to the Telly Savalas era where he was Kojak
stuff,
he just kind of became one character forever, and that was all you ever saw. Right. But this is like nuanced and different. I don't know.
Because we'd see him on Love Boat all the time, or Hollywood Squares, or those roasts, or something. I remember just seeing him like, oh, you know, no, nice guy, lollipop in his mouth, hey, who loves you, baby, and all that. And seeing him in this, like, dang, other direction.
Well,
nice guy with a lollipop in his mouth.
I got an email.
High praise.
Yeah, high praise. I got an email from your mom yesterday. She says, hey, I don't know if I've sent you this one before, but this is Brian. This is what his date said when he tried to kiss her on prom night at the door. And this is what your date said here. I've got audio. Here we go.
When I think that you've earned that privilege, I'll let you know.
All right.
She had a really, she smoked a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
Is
that what that was? Okay. I didn't want to judge or, you know, assume anything.
Nope.
Smoker voice. Okay. Get some sleep.
Get some sleep. You're gonna need it.
Oh, I kind of like that guy. Oh, I forgot the guy at the end. Listen to the guy at the end.
Get some sleep. You're gonna need it.
Up yours.
Whoever played that corporal guy or that sergeant guy, I liked him in this. I don't know his name. Who was that guy? The other military.
Yeah, the other one who survived, basically.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he lived. That's right.
Yeah.
What's his name? Richard Jekyll as Sergeant Bowman.
Yeah, Bowman.
Or Jekyll.
Jekyll. Is he around? Yeah. Is he dead? Probably dead.
He died in 1997.
Okay.
At the age of 70.
Oh, yep. 21, almost 22 years ago. Jeez. longer. He has been dead longer than when he made this movie that the war had ended. Think of that.
Oh, yeah.
That's weird. All right. Yeah. Here's a redundant thing to say. Cassavetes is so intense, and here's one of his redundant things.
You slob.
You slob.
You slob.
Yeah. And don't forget, here is just a point I want to make. His son, Nick Cassavetes, who's also a bit of an auteur, because this guy was like directing and acting and all kind of stuff. And his son, Nick, also did a lot of that. And is famous, for me anyway, being in Face Off. He's like the bald friend of Castor Troy. And my memory is of him getting shot in the neck and blood going whamp, whamp, squirting out of his neck. So if you guys see, go watch Face Off again and watch his son, Nick Cassavetes, rocking out. All right, here's, I don't remember what this is.
Food.
Cincinnati.
Oh,
oh, yeah. Word association.
Yeah. Can't remember what that was.
Again, like, movie could have done something, and instead it plays comic relief. And yes, that was comic relief, as much as it doesn't seem funny. And it's like, why did this? I was actually saying out loud, hey, movie, I don't need a joke every 12 minutes exactly. Like, you can just stop with the jokes.
Right. They don't have to keep going. Here's Cassavetes being angry and acting.
All right, Franco, what is it this time?
How am I supposed to see you in cold water? The guy's got hot water. You got hot water. You want to feel right?
Jeez. Wow.
They talked about hot water for like about 10 minutes. It was great. They said hot water like 50 times.
And I do like Sutherland sticking his head out with a mouthful of toothpaste. He's going, during that scene.
Yeah. He was such a lanky, weird-looking dude when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
All right, say the name. Oh, this is the name of the movie.
So now, if you dirty dozen have no objections.
Yeah, you got to get that in
oh,
there.
Oh, he
you,
just you. Thought of that.
Mm-hmm. You, I don't know. Let's say dirty dozen.
Double D. Okay, I see where you're going with this.
I do love it when they say the name of the movie, though.
Yeah.
I do, too. I always try to capture it. Here's another one.
Now talk, you bastard. Who the hell are you? You going to tell us or not? You going to tell us now?
I may have edited that a little bit. I just thought that guy's VO, because it wasn't really the guy talking that was beating him up. It was some ADR later, and he is ridiculous.
Now talk, you bastard. Who the hell are you? You going to tell us or not? You going to tell us now?
And he's just ridiculous.
So badly, yeah.
Yeah. Dubbed. The other guy, I think, wasn't, so it just mishmashed even worse. It was terrible.
That was the bathroom scene where they beat up Charles Bronson?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Where Charles Bronson refused to say anything other than nine or whatever.
Nine?
That was his thing. Nine. Schnell. All right, here's something turkey shoot thing.
Ready for the turkey shoot?
Oh, that's what that is. Okay. And then, this never got old, I wrote. No, it got old. It got old.
It got old. I was so glad when dude shot that thing out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I was worried they weren't going to. And it's a movie thing to do. I've seen movies where it's effective. It's like you've set some awful sound off, and the fact that it's playing and you're having a scene, a thoughtful scene or something, there's a discordant quality to it, and I get why it's there, and I understand. But this one just got right up inside my endocrine system. It was terrible. I hated it. All right, that's your clips. And now there's this. Where is it? This. The film site checklist goes like this. The apex of overly dramatic gun deaths. Check. The K in Kojak stands for crazy. Check.
And creepy.
And creepy. And the dirty two. Check. Hey, it's the Trek Connection time. Robert Phillips, who played Colonel Morgan, the MP guard. In TOS, played an officer seen with Pike on the Pike and the Orion Dancer in the cage. Sorry, the original pilot. Lauren Janes did stunts, was on TOS, did stunts for Shatner, was a stunt double for Charlie X and some other stuff. And Dick Miller, he was the MP at the hanging. Oh, yeah, remember the hanging at the beginning? I almost forgot that even happened.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. That was rough, yeah.
Oh, yeah, when he fell and it was just like the shot of his feet.
Oh, the feet. Yeah, looking up.
That was rough.
It was rough.
That's the most violent thing in the movie as far as I was concerned. Everything else seemed silly compared to that. But anyway, on TNG, he played the holographic news vendor in the episode The Big Goodbye. And on DS9, played Vin in the third season two-parter, past tense. He passed away January 30th at the age of 90. So 2 days ago. Wow.
Wow. That's
wow. Something. Yeah, really? Right up to the minute.
Wow.
Yep. There you go. Dick Miller. Oh, Dick Miller. We know Dick Miller. Duh. Go look up Dick Miller. You've seen him a billion times in Everything yes. Always.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. He's, Dick Miller. Yes. He's a character actor you've seen in 1,000 movies. It was like Gremlins. Yeah. He was somebody.
Oh, yes. Right. He was the handyman friend of the kid in Gremlins.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the guy.
Right.
He's great. He's in a billion things.
Terminator, Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, he got around.
I'm surprised we haven't seen him more on FilmSack because he was in Gremlins and The Burbs and so on.
Yeah. Did we ever do The Burbs? Or did we never get around to that?
Not yet.
Oh, really? I could have sworn we did The Burbs.
Yeah. We keep talking about it. It's one of Dunaway's favorite movies of all time, right?
Yes. Agreed. Yeah.
But yeah, he's in, I'm just looking here.
He's in Inner Space, Project X.
He worked a lot in the 2000s. He's been doing great. 90.
Small Soldiers.
Was on ER for a while. Let's see here. A whole bunch of movies. You've seen him so many times. It's ridiculous. Oh, he was
Rest
in that,
in
wow. He was in that Walter pilot for the Radar O'Reilly spinoff that never went anywhere.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So was Lee Ermey the hangman in this movie? Was that my imagination?
Charlie Ermey?
I think it's your imagination.
Yeah.
I don't think
because
that's
I looked and I was like, it just flashed to him for a second. I'm like, oh, is that Ermey?
I don't think that's him.
Maybe I wanted to see him in there.
You wanted it awesome. To be Ermey.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe he would have been very young there because he was born in 44. So.
Sure. Soundtrack grade, I'm going to give it a whatever. I didn't even notice it. Did you guys notice it? There's a lot.
Really? Because I noticed it. I thought it was overly bombastic when it needed to be, you know, upbeat. Mm. And I felt like it was like this weird sort of like tension where I wasn't really feeling it. Like it wasn't a bad score, but it just didn't feel like it was scored for this film at all times.
Yeah. Well, I think I agree with that. It was fine. Mm-hmm. Not the best or worst thing I've ever heard. Well, that brings us current to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's begin, as is the tradition, with Randy Jordan.
The Dirty Dozen. Just like a Saturday night at Ebbets House. Why put words in the middle?
Perfect. Perfect. Don't change a thing. Brian Q. Dunaway.
Thank you. The Dirty Dozen. Like poor dumbstruck Donald Sutherland laying face down on the mean cobble streets outside of a German B&B. Look on his face is the look on my face when I watch this movie.
B&B, I love it. Finally, Brian Ebbett.
The Dirty Dozen, the best Western we've never seen.
Oh, best Western, I like that.
Best Western, that's a great place to stay too, right?
It is.
It is, yes. You got to build it yourself first. It doesn't have windows.
I don't know that I've ever heard your middle name, Brian. Can I guess what it is? Ibbett.
Oh, my.
Yeah, because I just faked it for them. I faked it for them, but I just want to see if I can guess yours. Okay, I'm going to guess. Ready?
Yeah.
Christopher.
No.
No.
Brian. Chamois. I don't know what it is. What is it?
Oh my gosh. So close with Chamois.
Chamois.
What is it? Now the world will know.
It's Long for Dick. It's Richard.
Oh, Richard.
Nah.
It's Long for Dick. That's fantastic. All right. Well, I never knew that. That always freaks me out when I hear people's middle names because I just go,
Brian Richard of it. Yeah, because then my initials are BRI. And
oh, yeah. Brian.
My dad did that whole thing to make it all fold in on itself.
Oh, well. Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Let's play. Oh, wait. I have this. Alternate title just handed to me. This was almost called Carton of Poo Covered Eggs, which is just another way of saying Dirty Dozen. Right? It's another Dirty Dozen there. Or Lee Marvin, the 89 year old of. Sorry. Lee Marvin, the 89 year old, 43 year old. There you go. Hey, emails come into the show on a regular basis, and we got one this week from Thorgan, who I think we see a lot in the chats and stuff. Mm-hmm. Regular member of our community says this after listening to the Crystal Skull Sack.
Skull Sack.
Skull Sack. That doesn't sound right. I had a stream of consciousness, not unlike the one Brian Dunaway does in his intros. Maybe he should read this. Well, you don't have it, so I'll read it. He says, Scott, Homer Simpson does not become smart because he stuck a crayon in his brain. Quite the opposite. He put a crayon up there as a child, and when it was removed, he became smart. Later, Moe inserted another crayon in to become stupid again when Homer would no longer accepted most of his family and friends. Get it right, he says. Okay, wow. Yeah, I got it wrong.
I forgot about that.
Yep. You're right.
Yeah. But I remembered it the way you described it, but yeah, now that he says it, okay, it's like that.
I thought it was because of the thing and got smart, but I was wrong.
Jeez, Thorgan. Jeez, Steve, be nicer about it.
Yeah. I mean, dear listener, are you okay?
He went on to say this. He says, also, the film sack of Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull was better than the movie, and he means it.
Nice.
Good. Also, the title of Indy 4 should have been Indiana Jones and the Refrigerator of Destiny, set in 2522. It's the story of Henry Jones, the 22nd, and the legend of the refrigerator that helped people survive catastrophic events. Henry Jones, too, survives a nuclear blast. John Connor survives Judgment Day, and the film sack crew survives watching Crystal Skull. This thing writes itself. George, Steven, where's my check? Keep sacking. That was very Dunaway at the end there. Nice job.
It was good.
Yeah. Do you approve, Dunaway?
I approve. Absolutely, I approve. Okay. More, please.
All right. And, I apologize for the crayon up the brain thing. He seems very serious about that part.
Oh, well, then I'll offer a quick retraction to Japanese Crystal Skull Ride apparently was around a lot longer than the, was around a lot earlier than the movie.
Oh.
Really?
I didn't know that. Yeah. Wait, how did they know about the crystal skull?
They just had a crystal skull in the ride, and I don't know if it inspired. I don't think it inspired the movie. I just think it was like, crystal skull. That's a cool thing.
Really?
we'll put this in the ride, and hey, we'll also make a movie about it.
That seems crazy to me. Okay, learn something new every day. Hey, and also, guys, real quick, Dirty Dozen, not a Western. Just to throw it out there, not a Western. But I'll tell you what.
Stop your emails.
I'll tell you what our next movie is, though, and that is Watchmen. Who will watch the Watchmen? We will. The 2000 something.
Ooh, blue wieners.
I love this movie, so I'm going in already a fan. And I know a lot of people defer and say, no, I don't like what Zack Snyder did. I actually think it's the best thing Zack Snyder has done.
The secret chord David played and it pleased the Lord.
Hallelujah. Anyway, I like 300. I like his Dawn of the Dead remake. And I like that's it. And then this one's my favorite of those things before he went on to make very bad DC movies and also that horrible Sucker Punch thing, which I think should have been our warning shot. We should have all seen that coming and gone, okay, wait a minute. Settle down, everybody. Now I do hear he's going back to his roots. We'll talk about this next week too, I'm sure. But Netflix has offered him a bunch of money to make zombie movies for the platform. And that's exciting to me because I think his Dawn of the Dead remake was really good. One of my favorite zombie movies, and we should do that on Film Sack if that ever shows up.
Yeah.
If we haven't already, I can't remember. But.
And for those of you who have your own copy of Watchmen, we are watching the theatrical release version that is 2 hours and 41 minutes long. Mm-hmm. If you are watching the director's cut, which is 3 hours and 6 minutes long, or the ultimate cut, which is 3.5 hours long,
wow.
You're going to see some things we don't.
That's the one that adds all the what was that side story in the comics with the shipwreck?
Shipwreck.
I didn't know they cut that out. I had no idea.
Yeah,
I mean, I knew it wasn't in the movie, and I knew it was in the book, but I didn't realize that existed in film somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I should watch.
It's animated.
I feel like I kind of want to
see. Theatrical version. Go ahead and start writing your emails now, talking about how if I would just watch the longer one, I would like it. Go ahead, just start writing them now.
I'm excited. I really am.
I kind of wanted to watch. I've never watched. I have it because I have the big special edition Watchmen thing. Mm-hmm. I might actually watch the big one.
Oh, you should, and then one of us can talk about it. But listeners at home, we'll do what you want, but we're gonna technically be mostly talking about the theatrical release, mostly.
Black Freighter, that's what it is.
Black Freighter.
Yeah, the ultimate cut, 215-minute scenes include the expanded action sequences, additional exposition from the director's cut, even more exposition segments, and additionally interweaves the animated Black Freighter short into the story to mimic its role as the story within the story in the graphic novel.
Oh, nice.
Black Freighter.
That was my nickname, my porn nickname when I was in that business.
The Black Freighter.
Yeah, the Black Freighter. Anyway, so that's next week. That's Watchmen, a controversial yet exciting moment for us because it's actually been on our list for a while and it just keeps popping in and out of Netflix and it's finally on there. So we're going to jump on this one while we can.
Well, and also Scott Johnson has a quota of bringing up the phrase blue penis, I think.
Oh,
and
blue
so we have
penis.
To make sure and meet your quota.
I cannot wait for more of the gigantic blue penis that shows up on screen and a very well animated, big, floppy. Never erect, as far as I know, but Dr. Manhattan's wiener is all up in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the thing. And then the other big memory for me is how Rorschach goes. Well, that's not a spoiler,
Rorschach.
I guess. But the way Rorschach goes out at the end is something else, man. That's just, it's a great, and if you haven't read the comic, you're all terrible and you should read it, people at home, because it's an amazing Jeez. Comic book. It is. It's so good, dude. If you
it's
don't read, if you count yourself like any kind of genre,
call them terrible.
If you're a genre nerd and you're an adult and you haven't read Watchmen,
you should have read it.
You should be ashamed. You should be ashamed.
Terrible.
Shame. All right, we're done. That's it. Filmsack.com is our website. You can visit there, find out all our old stuff. I was just checking out the feed, and sure enough, it's all the way back to Kroll. So if you've missed any old episodes, hot damn, it's all there for you. So go get it. You can leave us voicemails. I'm going to start doing these again. I got that voicemail working. 801-471-0462. If you have a voicemail for the show and you'd rather do that than an email, we'll take them. Filmsack@gmail.com is the email address if you prefer that. And you can find us on Twitter @FilmSack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
9. 11.
No. We'll see you next year. Or week. Not year. Week. Next year. Jeez. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Food.
Cincinnati.